All right, let's head out to that studio in the sky where we've got Mr. Joe Sinnott in the cloud waiting for his exciting interview. He's been one of the champions of Shale Energy Day or World Shale Day. I forget the name of it. I was the Crude Life has been a supporter of it as well, but not like Joe Sinnott, who's been well, his career came from it, his life came from it, so he's got some homage to pay, I guess, to the shale revolution, and in a positive way. And by the way, Joe, look at my hat here. It's I'm in Spanish today, so my shale oil and gas world is in Spanish today, so that way people can come up to me and say, "What's your hat say?" That's my way of engaging in an energized conversation. Joe, how are you doing today?
Oh, Jason, I feel like I'm always energized here when I come on the Crude Life and have a chat with you. So doing fine today.
Excellent, excellent. And of course, the Crude Life, as well as This Week in Energy, a weekly radio program that, oh boy, we've been doing now for 15 years. It's been 15 years now this year, later on in the year, but either way, we'll go ahead and claim it already. But, Joe, let's talk a little bit about the Shale Day coming up on March 17th. Some people know it as St. Patrick's Day, you know? I mean, when they kind of did something with green paint and snakes, I can't totally remember what that was all about. Have to watch the Always Sunny in Philly episode again, Philadelphia episode again, to refresh myself on how green paint was involved with the snakes. But either way, Joe, what's your let's just set the table a little bit. Your background in the shale world, I guess. Not even say oil and gas anymore or energy, because we're specifically talking shale. What's your background in shale?
Well, when I came up from the Gulf of Mexico in 2008 to the Pittsburgh region, the Appalachian region, it was just at the beginning of the shale boom. So up here, we've got the expansive, prolific Marcellus shale underlying much of this region, and came up and started working for EQT just as it was, starting to experiment with the Marcellus. So, I had the good fortune of spending 11 years with EQT as it took full advantage of the shale that's underneath our feet here in this region. And, again, got to see it grow, got to see it evolve, and certainly, owe the majority of my oil and gas experience to, the involvement in shale development, the production of gas from the shale, and obviously, moving it downstream for all of its various uses.
Where were you at in the Gulf?
So I was based out of southern Louisiana, Lafayette, Louisiana, Youngsville to be specific. Make sure I give proper nod to Youngsville folks where I lived and work with Schlumberger. So Schlumberger for 3 years offshore on the drilling side, MWD, LWD.
Now, I'm not familiar with that town. I am familiar with St. Charles. I'm familiar with New Orleans, of course. Were you in the St. Charles area?
No, so Lafayette area is about an hour to the west of Baton Rouge, about 2 hours to the west of New Orleans. So right there along the I-10 corridor, smack dab in the middle there of southern Louisiana.
Boy, that is a hot spot down there, that Louisiana Gulf area, just from the petrochemical plants that they've been building nonstop. Europe actually came over and started building like refineries and shipping areas because it was cheaper than exporting it to Europe. They would just do it here and then they'd have it. And so that was quite a educational piece for me, learning all those different things. Of course, my shale background comes from North Dakota with the Bakken, where I grew up in agriculture. And the only thing that I knew about oil and gas was, basically that gas prices got people, talking around Thanksgiving. But we never had any, political polarizing issues, at least when I grew up. I mean, all of our farm equipment ran on diesel and petroleum, and we even had kerosene heaters in the barn and all kinds of different things. And so, and we even had wind power, a windmill. Of course, the windmill just would deal with water and maybe power a small pole barn or something like that. But, we were ones that would utilize a lot of the different energy, solar too, because you'd want to build things that were facing the south and the east so that, and even the west to a certain degree, so that you could capitalize on that solar energy because we were watching our pennies with our petrol purchases. We knew exactly what the wind would bring in with the Amish windmill. That's what I call them now, the Amish windmill. I still think the Amish are more advanced in wind energy than we are as a United States country, but that's a discussion for another day. Well, I mean, think about it, Joe. I mean, you can have your neighbors come over, put up a windmill over a weekend, and now you got water and a little bit of power. That's some pretty good energy efficiency right there. But we're here to talk about shale energy. For me, like I said, it was a boom. It was the Bakken boom, if you will. The closest rig to me was 7 hours away, and so I went out and lived out in the Bakken oil field and embedded myself, sleeping in vehicles and that sort of thing for a year. Moved my family out there so that we could really embed ourselves and understand what this all is all about. And so for me, it was a little bit different when it started getting political because I didn't understand it. I saw the good it did. I understood from a civic city understanding where, 60 to 70% of a city's emergency services and hospitals rely on fossil fuels in order to power those type of industries. Yet those are the first people to come up and say, let's get rid of it. Kind of a weird thing there. It's a little bit of a entitlement that I don't understand either. But what's it been like since you moved out to the Marcellus? Because that's a pretty big shale area, isn't it?
Yeah, sure. If you take all of the Appalachian Basin, the basin as a whole, so Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, it is the largest producing basin, at least in terms of natural gas. So, keep in mind up here that is the focus. There's some wet gas there, so obviously you get some liquid, some condensate. We're certainly close to the Utica, overlap with the Utica, in fact, in a lot of areas. But yeah, it is massive, Jason. Whatever the current numbers are in terms of, if we were our own country, we'd be in the whatever it is, top five in natural gas production here in this region. So yeah, to say it's prolific doesn't even do justice to the insane amount of energy that we have right below our feet. And again, as a quick aside, just did a workshop here recently tying together, Pittsburgh energy and leadership. And one of the stats that I pulled in ahead of time was that, you could argue that Pittsburgh itself, the city of Pittsburgh, is really the only major city in the United States that has such a prolific energy source right below it. Now, we don't actually access the Marcellus Shale from below the city of Pittsburgh, but again, you think about a lot of these other cities, the Houstons of the world, these other energy hubs, the Dallas and Oklahoma City and Denver. Obviously, they're adjacent to lots of energy activity, but nobody comes close to actually having that amount of energy right below our feet, Jason. So again, it's miraculous, it's prolific, and it's certainly life-giving in so many different ways.
I didn't realize Pittsburgh had that underneath them like that, where they could at some point just that's like the reserves. You know what I mean? That's like Pittsburgh's reserves, I guess. But talking about, World Shale Energy Day, we're with Joe Sinnott with Whiting Partner Whiting Partners. Anyways, a host of the Energy Detox podcast. I've got 15 things going on today here, Joe, so I do apologize. I even started the interview off without introducing your companies and professionalism, if you will. So I do apologize about that.
Jason, I think we spend too much time talking to each other. We're well past introductions here. We're all about just jumping right in and having a conversation. So no
I was just
apologies
telling
necessary.
someone that the other day that I called them, and the way I'm like three sentences in before I even say hello. You know what I mean? Like I've already done in my head what the conversation is. So I start speaking and the people on the other line are like, wait, what's going on now? And who is this? I've got that problem where I just start talking without introducing myself and a couple paragraphs in here. But of course, former oil and gas executive, now he's an executive coach. He also has a podcast, the Energy Detox podcast, but we're here to talk about World Shale Energy Day, March 17th. Some people celebrate St. Patrick's Day, but people like Joe Sinnott and myself, we celebrate World Shale Energy Day. And, looking at the history of this whole industry, it really did start in Pennsylvania. It's Edwin Drake, as far as if my memory serves me correctly, first commercialized well, and now we flash forward to today, and this whole hydraulic fracture and shale revolution has really allowed people to become what we are today, which is have a lot of time to complain about the things that bring us the prosperity that has brought us, and at the same time go out and work so that some of us can have more prosperity. It's a weird deal. But how is Pennsylvania these days with energy? And I know that Gasland came out about 15 years ago, and that seemed to have a little bit of momentum against the state of Pennsylvania. But every time I turn around, it just seems like the Marcellus is doing better and better than it, the year before. What's going on out there with the energy production?
Yeah, well, in terms of production, it's certainly not the growth that we saw from, say, the early 2010s into, through 2020, in part because, we don't have the pipeline, we don't have the infrastructure to move out all of the gas that we could be producing here. So, in terms of growth, Jason, it's largely leveled out, which is a, similar story for, a lot of the oil and gas industry over the last couple of years. But in terms of, where it stands within the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, one metric, if you will, is the favorability rating of fracking, of the development of natural gas here. And if you go back to, I think it was, the exit polling from the 2024 election, it was clear that there is a net positive favorability here among Pennsylvania residents who see the benefits, right? They see the benefits to their pocketbooks, to their bills. They see the benefits in terms of jobs and development, and they see and breathe and feel the benefits from a cleaner atmosphere, cleaner air, which is, amazingly been reduced since where we were 20 years ago because of the big switch from coal-fired electricity generation to largely natural gas generation, which is on the order of 60% of electricity here in Pennsylvania being produced from natural gas. So again, it's almost inescapable the positive impacts of natural gas. And so, we have favorability among the population here. Certainly, from an efficiency standpoint, from a production standpoint, the companies that operate here keep getting better and better at what they do. And really, the biggest limiter right now is, again, infrastructure and the ability to actually take full advantage of that shale, of the natural gas that's beneath our feet.
You're one of the ones that, Winning Partners, the Energy Detox podcast, embraced the World Shale Energy Day, much like the Crude Life did, just, more from an awareness standpoint than anything. When I think about the Crude Life's history a little bit, it's kind of interesting because when we first started out 15 years ago, I started noticing, that the Greta Thunbergs of the world were starting to emerge. And so I did my media thing and put my PC hat on and started using the word energy instead of oil or gas. Well, the industry didn't like that very much, and they would try to correct me and this and that. And then after, oh, I think it when it started getting pretty political, I decided to lean into the Crude Life because I'm a fan of biblically good or biblically bad. You know what I mean? Either you go all in or go all out. None of this, half ass, if you will. Sorry, there's my one swear for the radio audience out there with the FCC. But so you don't get to swear this one, Joe. But you can show one thing of nudity, but we'll just not do that, Okay. See, we're on the radio still, so we follow some guidelines still by the Federal Communications Commission, if you will. But and so we went back to the oil and gas. Well, then the industry started using the word energy, and so I thought it was really interesting that I've never been in sync with kind of the mainstream. Where are we at now? I mean, I've joked for probably since COVID that we'll probably see, Exxon, Chipotle, Verizon merge together as a company because a lot of these companies are no longer oil and gas companies. In fact, Chevron, not Chevron, Oxy. Oxy went from Occidental Petroleum to Oxy, an energy company. And now they're a carbon management company. So energy has even left some of these major companies as well. Where are you at with some of that? And where do you think the industry is in embracing shale energy and oil and gas? Because I find that some of the old traditional cheerleaders for the oil and gas industry, they kind of hide a little bit when people are trying to promote the specific industry of oil and gas and shale. And I get there's some PR stuff and that sort of thing, but where are you at? Where do you see? I mean, you're a big proponent of it. You know, you're one of the few champions for World Shale Energy Day, at least in my network and in my circle. So, talk to me a little bit about that, because that I think that's an important lesson and an important communication for the industry, if not people outside the industry.
Well, from my perspective, Jason, I'd say over the last, call it 5 years, the industry as a whole has made a more concerted effort to not shy away from the fact that, you know what, oil and gas is fundamental to our modern existence. And, you know, it's still, you still have plenty of pockets who, you know, don't want to go out of their way to, you know, promote what it is that we do in this industry. But by and large, Jason, it's inescapable that, look, oil and gas is here, it needs to be here, and it's so, I don't want to say obvious, but it's obvious to lots of people, you know, beyond the industry now that, you know, none of this modern stuff happens without oil and gas. And, you know, natural gas in particular, when we're talking about all the electricity demand needs for AI and whatever else comes down the pike, right? So I think in the industry, there's been enough chatter, there's been enough, you know, talking heads, almost, you know, to the point of cliche saying, hey, we've done a bad job over the last 100 years of defending ourselves, and now we need to stand up. So I do think, you know, if you're looking at a trajectory, Jason, there is more people out there who are vocal and tactful saying, look, oil and gas will continue to be a necessary part of the energy mix. There is no question there. And we're going to do it in a responsible way. And to be honest, Jason, you know, I never thought about it. You know, 15 years of working in the industry, you know, my roles dictated that I got stuff done, right? I got it done responsibly. I got it done in an appropriate manner, but I didn't worry about the macro narrative around the industry. You know, I put my head down and I got it done. Whereas now, over the last 6+ years in my current role, you know, more sort of out there, if you will, in the public domain, far more involved in industry groups and public messaging and writing letters to the editor and speaking in public at, you know, county council meetings and all of these things, you know, I've had the opportunity to go forth and, you know, promote, advocate, or at least just speak to the facts of what it is we do, which brings us back to World Shale Energy Day. It's an opportunity to at least share the facts of what we do, objective truths, the science behind the development of shale resources here in the United States and around the world, as the name of the holiday would suggest. And that's the place to start, right? Because most people don't have a clue. And again, I don't, you know, that's not an insult, but, you know, most people cannot explain the fundamental process of extracting oil and natural gas from a rock that is, you know, harder than, you know, probably whatever cement underlies your floor, your carpet, or whatever. You know, it is an amazing technology, an amazing development that, again, first appeared on the scene back on March 17, St. Patrick's Day of 1949.
Now that I'm getting my bearings together a little bit, you know, we got socked with snow last night. And so, you know, up in my neck of the nape here in Minnesota, I'm 45 minutes outside of Fargo. Of course, I grew up in Fargo. And, you know, the whole eastern side of North Dakota is interesting because you can drive 20 miles west of Fargo and draw a straight line from South Dakota to Canada. And that's literally 60% of the population, if not 65 to 70% now, because the two universities are right on the eastern border. And so the eastern side of the state is very Minnesota, very Minneapolis. Like they are more blue than red in terms of political. And because of that, you know, I've been in North Dakota prides themselves on being a Republican state, but they bring back like $4 from the federal government for every $1 they kick in. So it's a very socialized Republican state, if you will. But they're big proponents of oil and gas because it allows the state not only to keep the emergency services going and the transportation department going, but it heats the homes. And it, you know, keeps people alive. And so there is an appreciation that you don't see in Minnesota, for example, which is kind of weird. For me personally, we had a 2 week stint where it was minus 20 degrees air temperature, not windshield. It was like minus 40 with windshield. But when the air temperature is minus 20 degrees air temperature, which I said twice apparently, if you don't have propane, you're dead. I mean, you are dead. We even have some people in North Dakota that still burn coal, actually, like in their basements and things like, you know, they got coal chutes. And oh, you Pittsburgh, you guys have coal chutes out there too, probably on some of the older homes. So you know what I'm talking about there. But it was so interesting for me being in the media, trying to be objective and trying to understand the realities behind it. And so when politics got into oil and gas, much like it did with the media, then they started seeing it get into other areas to where, okay, now politics is in the school, politics is now into science, politics is now into here. It's gotten to the point now where politics has ruined politics, where people cannot even have a simple political conversation at the Thanksgiving table anymore without people getting up and storming away. And so I do wonder if that's hurt or helped the oil and gas industry, because the oil and gas industry is very controlled. It is very systematic. And so even a lot of the talking heads got into talking points. And so whenever you would hear something about the oil and gas industry, it was always energy security, jobs, innovation, you know, that the quality of life and that sort of thing, which are really important to people. But it would just go right over their head. It was like they didn't even care, and a number of things. How did you deal with that, Joe? I struggled for a while with that, to where I didn't know how to talk to people about that. And like you can see, I'm baiting them now. I'm up in an area where we've got agriculture, and so we do have a lot of Hispanic population up here, and they love oil and gas, and they love it, and that's why they love this. But for me, this is kind of my way this time of year to engage in a shale conversation, engage in a one-on-one, pretty much, because that's where I do my best work is one-on-one. When we start getting into groups, all of a sudden, you know, the groupthink can get in really quick, and all it takes is one person to go the other way. And if they're popular in their little small group, well, that, now you're screwed, if that's even a word you can say anymore. I know it's okay to say from the FCC, but how do you communicate with people? How do you aware, you know, do some awareness on people? Do you get much resistance? Talk to me a little bit about that.
Yeah, so my approach, Jason, is the same approach that I encourage those that I work with to take when it comes to communication, which is, set aside or at least, resist the urge to jump straight to talking points. Nobody wants that, especially in this age of AI when there's already enough fluff and empty language out there. Like, the last thing you want to do is just lean on talking points. So what I encourage people to do, again, whether we're talking about advocating for the role of oil and gas in our world, or whether it's some internal communication that you need to make or some internal stance that you're taking that might not be terribly popular. What I encourage people to do, Jason, is acknowledge the trade-offs right away. Acknowledge the elephants in the room, if you will. A lot of people, they're afraid to do it. They're afraid of giving somebody else ammo or, conceding, if you will, when that's, the opposite. I'd rather take the ammo away, show that you understand, and then jump into the straightforward, objective case of saying, look, this is a net positive. There are obviously trade-offs in the development of any type of energy. And again, I think we'll all concede that energy is necessary for life. It always has been, right, since humans roamed the earth. But so many individuals, even all the way to the very top of organizations and even to the top of, advocacy organizations and industry groups, in my opinion, they don't do a very good job, or do a decent job at all, of acknowledging the trade-offs. And what are you going to do in that case, Jason? I mean, if it's already, somewhat polarized to begin with, well, it's not going to get any better if it's just going to be talking point versus talking point. And so that's where I start, Jason. That's my approach. Now, I will say that I have the beauty of being independent, right? I no longer work for an oil and gas company. So I have the ability to, take my own approach when it comes to communicating the merits of oil and gas. I have the leeway to talk about trade-offs, perhaps in a more open way or at least a less guarded way than others might. And that's an advantage. And again, it's an advantage, to translate things back to my day-to-day job. Well, it's an advantage that I encourage other people to look for. Be that differentiated voice that doesn't rely on talking points, doesn't rely on running something through ChatGPT, but tells it like it is, acknowledges the elephants in the room, gets that stuff out of the way so that you can actually have a fruitful conversation, whether it's at the dinner table or whether it's in a town hall meeting or whether it's in a one-on-one conversation with an employee that, you're having some issues with.
One of the things I noticed too is, I grew up in agriculture, and so I would listen to my uncles and cousins and extended family members complain, at Thanksgiving and Christmas, how the grocery store has replaced them, that the farmers were no longer, I guess, revered as where food came from because the younger generation just assumed that the grocery stores were the Jetsons, and when the doors opened, the food was there, like 3D printer food or something was just taking care of it. And I've said this for a while now, probably 10 years, that the light switch has replaced the oil and gas worker. The light switch has replaced the coal miners, if you will, because as soon as that light switch works, nobody cares where it comes from. And that's sad. That's real sad. And so for me, that is a lot of my motivation really behind the educational and the awareness behind the oil and gas industry. For me personally, I think it'd be fantastic if every single company from supply chain to oil and gas company would just take 30 seconds and post a World Shale Energy Day post on social media. That's it. Just one post amongst the 100 St. Patrick's Day, look at us partying at work posts that we're going to see. I mean, that's the one thing, boy. You want to know if people work or not, just go on social media and they'll brag about how much fun they're having at work all day long. And, but that's a different deal here. But I did want to talk about, too, how this celebration, March 17th, 1949 is what I'm looking at here in my notes, is when it happened for the actual official first shale piece of commercial shale, I guess. Go
Well, they're
ahead.
saying it, I mean, setting aside the shale, it was the first two commercial frack jobs done by Halliburton. I
Is that
think
what it
one
was?
in,
Okay.
one in Oklahoma, one in Texas back there on that date in 1949.
1949, yeah, the annual global celebration on March 17th, the exact date of those 1949 commercial treatments, as I'm reading here. The event is distributed grassroots initiative rather than a single conference. That's interesting to me too, because that's what I was saying, where I'm really encouraging oil and gas, even if you're a cafe where you get most of your money from those oil and gas workers. Just go ahead and post a social media post about World Shale Energy Day. That's the type of thing that I'm trying to create awareness for, is the supply chain and those individuals that really do rely on it to, just say thank you one day. One day, that's it. How are you approaching World Shale Energy Day? I mean, you've been a big proponent of it, and I think you've even done some podcasts on it in the past too. So, how are you approaching it, and how are people engaging with you on it, and are they?
Yeah, well, historically, I think 3 years in a row, sure, I did a podcast, or in some cases, a series of podcasts around it. I did 2 years of a World Shale Energy Day slash St. Patrick's Day giveaway with some Guinness themed items,
Oh,
glasses, coasters,
get you.
a shale-esque bottle opener, not actual shale, because it wasn't readily available and wouldn't work as well. But anyway, the moral of the story is, Jason, I've done what I could do to, again, promote this idea of a single day to celebrate shale in all of its forms and all of its locations, both shale that has been tapped and shale that is untapped around the world. And this year won't be as intense as prior years just due to other obligations, but obviously I'll still acknowledge it. Obviously, we'll still see if I can get a podcast out there acknowledging the day. But most significantly, To your point, it's an opportunity for a cohesive message that's different. You know, every company, I shouldn't say every company, but you know, most companies have some sort of communications team or individual, and they have, you know, a great approach to getting messages out there, conveying what needs to be conveyed for their company, for their industry. But clearly, Jason, when you have a cohesive message, a single message, and one that's different, right? One that goes beyond, hey, you know, it's Halloween. Look at all the stuff that's made out of oil and gas on Halloween. Hey, it's Christmas. Hey, look, you know, you don't have Christmas lights and plastic trees and all of this without oil and gas. Hey, you know, Easter's coming up here and those plastic eggs, you know, they don't just emerge naturally from the rear ends of magical bunnies. They're produced with oil and gas. And so, you know, those things are out there and they're good, don't get me wrong, but in this age of shortening and shortening attention spans, you need something different. And to have a co you know, I would say consistent, cohesive message spoken, shared in whatever flavor a given company wants to share, you know, that's a huge opportunity, Jason. You know, it's not always easy to get lots of companies all on the same page when they have all of their own worries, you know, financial worries, operational worries, cultural worries, whatever worries are on the horizon. The last thing that they need to worry about is trying to collaborate with everybody else in the industry to have some sort of message that's really going to move the needle. This is an opportunity to do that, an easy opportunity to do that, Jason. So, you know, that's one of the reasons that I'll do my part. And, you know, for companies, again, year to year, they might not be able to put as much time and energy in as other years. I'm going to be example of that this year. But why not take advantage of something that's out there? To your point, it's a grassroots effort that is, you know, a relatively easy lift to amplify a nonpartisan, science-based acknowledgement of what shale development means to the world.
You know, if I had some time and some energy, I would think that we could do a St. Patrick's Day World Shale Energy Toast as many worldwide as possible. You know, with the different social medias we have and the different connectivity, you know, you could almost do a, all right, it's 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time or Pacific Standard Time, Pacific for their happy hour, I guess. And so it'd be 9 o'clock your time or 10 o'clock. Something like that, you know, with a big worldwide toast, because I get it, St. Patrick's Day is going to win out every time, right? I mean, it's got the majority of the people on its side. It's got the Catholic Church on its side. It's got the bars on its side. But none of that exists without the oil and gas industry. And so there's something to it by just saying thank you to the industry that is giving you everything that you are now enjoying. What do you think of that idea?
Well, I think it's a great idea. I'll give you credit for it, but I need to give initial credit, if you will, to Jim Shear. So Jim is the director of World Shale Energy Day, and you know, he is the one who has helped this grassroots effort. He's pulled together companies, he's pulled together individuals who, again, believe in the potential of having this one day to make it easy for individuals and companies to come together and share this message. And he, in fact, has done just that, Jason. A toast on St. Patrick's Day slash World Shale Energy Day, and including those who wish to use an Irish beverage. Guinness is certainly my beverage of choice, and I don't know if I want to speak for Jim, but I think it might be his as well, at least on this day. And so, yeah, I mean, why not take advantage? It's fun. And certainly, again, all of my messaging over the last or the prior 3 World Shale Energy Days has been St. Patrick's Day themed. Taking the themes and the beverages and the food of St. Patrick's Day, weaving it into shale related themes. And, you know, on a personal note there, obviously weaving it into, hey, how do we lead? How do we communicate? How do we be more effective in moving the industry forward with a fun little excuse like this March 17th holiday? So credit to you, Jason, for the idea, but I need to, you know, I need to acknowledge Jim there. So that being said, one other quick plug: head to worldshaleenergyday.org, or obviously go ahead and Google it. Use the hashtag World Shale Energy Day. You know, it's there. It's available. Like I said, it's a relatively easy lift and a great way to get that cohesive, consistent message across the industry.
WorldShaleEnergy.org, is that right?
WorldShaleEnergyDay.org.
Ah, hang on here. I'm going to quickly type that in. This is real time here, folks. So, World chillenergyday.org. There we are. And I've been here before in the past and a number of things. I didn't, I guess I didn't know about the toast, but I don't drink alcohol, but that's okay. I can always, am I on mute? No. My thing came up and said mute. I wonder how it would do just doing a social media post instead of a food review. Just do a 30-second, hey, we're just doing a toast for World Chill Energy Day. If you do that, do one of these too. I wonder if that would even go viral or what. Have you ever done that? Have you, I mean, you did it in a podcast form. Have you done it in a 30-second clip, with today's attention span? Because that might be something we could do.
Yeah, that's a possibility, Jason. And I will say, just visualizing a toast, toasts tend to be celebratory. And again, I think that's the message. Not just celebratory. Again, like I said, there's plenty of messaging, good messaging out there to celebrate the incredible impact that shale development has had on human lives around the world. But Jason, I think going back to what you were saying about maybe the evolution of how energy industry leaders have approached advocacy, I think it's important to say, look, we should be celebrating. It's not enough to just play a defensive battle, right? And allow there's, to be some sort of narrative that the oil and gas industry is a necessary evil. Because some people will concede, yes, we rely on oil and gas, but I wish we didn't. Versus saying, hey, wait a second, it's not a necessary evil. It is, again, undeniably a net positive that allows us to continue growing and developing and realizing our full potential as individuals, as families, as countries, and ideally as a planet. So again, I like the idea of a toast for that reason. It's not defensive. It's saying, hey, look, this is good for everybody. We should all be celebrating. And to the extent people don't know why they should be celebrating, this is an opportunity to educate them.
You just put together some pieces of the puzzle that I've been looking for because you're exactly correct when you say that the industry has been playing more of a defensive battle when it comes to just the public relations and some of the awareness when it comes to the oil and gas industry. And obviously when oil and gas companies are changing their name and getting out of the industry and doing different things, it's had an impact on the public relations behind it. And for me, it was always different because have you ever heard of the big lie? If the lie is so big, people are going to believe it. But in order to do that, you have to have a good offense. You have to continue with the offense in order to keep the big lie going. And for a long time, after my experience with the agriculture and how the grocery store replaced the farmer, and then for the last 15 years, I've been embedded in the oil and gas industry, and I saw how the light switch has replaced the oil and gas worker there. I started going, well, if there's a big lie, then there's got to be a big truth, because there's so many talking points that are so truthful to people. It's like they just do the opposite of the big lie. They just deny, deny, deny instead of believe, believe, believe. But I think you just put my connection together for me because when somebody's doing a big lie, they're on the offense constantly, constantly on the offense. When you're involved in a big truth, you're always on the defense. You're constantly on the defense. And there's just something about people, they like to be with winners. They don't want to be with, the underdog. Sure, it's fun to be, respect the underdog, but they don't want to be the underdog by any means. And so I wonder how much of that's involved with it because, and I've never used the word big truth before this interview, before this actual interview, and I've never thought of it in that way until you so eloquently articulated that the industry has been more of on a defensive campaign than an offensive campaign. What do you make of that processing here in real time? The big lie versus the big truth and offense versus defense?
Well, I hear you saying big lie, big truth, and thinking about the world of big oil, obviously there's gotta be some sort of avenue, Jason, that we can go down. But beyond that, the idea of offense versus defense, again, I see that all the time in businesses. Again, countless examples, one of which is when a talented employee decides to voluntarily leave a company, right? I see a lot of defense from the existing leaders or the left behind leaders, if you will, who are trying to say, it's not so bad. We're going to plug a hole here. Yeah, we're losing this experience. Versus, at least asking themselves to say, hey, look, is there an opportunity to say, look, this is a good thing. This is a win-win. This is great for the person who left. This is actually great for us. And again, if it's a bunch of BS, if it's a big lie, that's not ideal. But if you can find the truth in that and believe it and basically go on the offensive, and again, not just try to get back to where we were, but to say, hey, look, this makes us better. This, helps us emerge stronger. Again, the idea of what doesn't kill you makes you stronger is clearly not a unique concept, Jason. But unfortunately, I don't see that actually deployed in, real life. I see a lot of defensiveness. I see a lot of, well, let's just get back to where we were. And quite frankly, that stinks. It's not energizing. It's not inspiring. It's not motivating. It's not morale boosting. It feels very defeatist. It feels very defensive. And so, Jason, clearly, I mean, there's something here just from a human standpoint, even beyond the world of business, where looking for those opportunities to go on the offensive, if you will, and understand that, look, there's always an opportunity to take advantage of some, unforeseen change or some adversary, if you will, in the case of anti-fossil fuel folks.
It's interesting how this is playing out. Joe Sinnott is our guest. Witting Partners is his company. Energy Detox is the name of his podcast. And we are talking about World Shale Energy Day happening on March 17th. You can go to the website of worldshaleenergyday.org. And Joe's not, as far as I know, you're not an owner of this. You're not really involved with the organization. You're just helping out create awareness for an industry that has really powered much of your life and family's life, as well as a lot of the similar reasons that I do it is more for a journalist truth type of thing, which is rather interesting, and that doesn't play well in some states and it does in others. But talk to me a little bit about from an executive coaching standpoint here, how would you coach somebody to deal with some of the polarizing language or the uncertainty that somebody might have going to a St. Patrick's Day celebration and trying to introduce the respect for, hey, you like that beer, huh? Okay, without getting into, where that beer comes from. You need this power for this and this and this and all these other things. 'Cause that I saw it in agriculture. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to hear how hard the farmers work. They don't want to hear how hard the oil and gas workers work. They just want to drink their beer. They just want to eat their steak. The steak comes from the meat department. It doesn't come from cows. I had to actually explain that to an eighth grader about 20 years ago. Seriously, eighth grader. I had to ex she had never even put together that a cow is where meat comes from at the grocery store. And it wasn't her fault. She just never extended her thought into that. And so how would you coach somebody who maybe wants to help create awareness, but maybe they're a little afraid?
Well, two good go-to tools that I like to deploy: humility and humor. So
There we
again,
go.
especially if we're talking about a St. Patrick's Day celebration or happy hour or kegs and eggs, if you're really starting early, humor and humility. So from a humility standpoint, share what you don't know. Share, what you were ignorant about until, 30 minutes ago. That's a great way to break the barrier and say, look, I had no idea actually, how this worked, and I've been in the industry for 20 years. Those type of things, again, kind of lower that barrier. And then the humor piece, again, I mean, if it's natural and it's not, just some sort of weird, slick, inauthentic attempt to get people's attention, like, people like to laugh. People, if it's self-deprecating humor or humor about, the industry and stereotypes and, pulling a Landman scene or quote or Billy Bob Thornton reference, whatever it takes, inject some humor, marry that with humility. And now, again, you're not coming across as having some sort of agenda. You're coming across as genuinely a curious person who's consistently and constantly learning. And, anybody that has some sort of neat tidbit or something of value, like, they're interested in sharing it. And most people, again, if it's being done without some sort of ulterior motive, they're interested in hearing it, Jason. But again, too many of these things come across as scripted, as these quick pivots, as some sort of, sleazy, salesy approach. And guess what? If it feels sleazy and salesy and unnatural, don't say it. Don't do it. Don't even try it. So I don't know if that's what you're looking for there, but that would be my quick hitting advice for anybody that's headed out for a St. Patrick's Day slash World Sail Shale Energy Day, happy hour or celebration that wants to connect those two together.
You just hit on a really good point, and for me, it was burying the lead, if you will, Landman. I mean, that was the number one show on Paramount, and it did so well. It's got a third season now, and that's the type of thing that people can talk about in mixed company is, entertainment and kids and that sort of thing. And if you can come in through the world of entertainment and have a conversation, and if it gets to the point to where you as an individual want to say, how can you be so naive or go down that, kind of the stern talking points, if you will, you can just pull out your phone and show them that clip from Billy Bob Thornton talking about the old wind energy when he's just going off that went extremely viral the first season. And to me, that's what Landman has done. Landman has opened the conversation. It's allowed actors and actresses that are well respected by all walks of life to really convey a message that the industry's been trying to do. And that's how I look at that as far as with Landman. I think Landman has done more for the industry probably than most of the top oil companies' PR departments over the last 20 years. And I'm not saying that as a knock on the oil and gas industry. I'm saying that as the power of Hollywood, to be honest. How much power that the entertainment industry has. And they spent 20, 30 years demonizing the industry in a variety of ways. Ever since Dallas came out, we went from the Beverly Hillbillies and Giant and, James Dean with Giant and Beverly Hillbillies, which really showed a rags to riches or just quality of life empowerment, if you will, to where all of a sudden, greed is good. Look at JR. And then it turned into Slick Willie, the president. And, I was looking at some of the words that came out of the oil and gas industry. And then, of course, being in the media my whole life, I'm like, okay, that one turned negative in the 90s. That one turned negative in the 80s. Oh, that one turned negative in the 2000s. It's interesting. It's like they literally took the oil and gas vernacular and terminology and said, okay, well, let's just turn that into a negative word, okay? It almost happened like that systematically, but that got ushered in through Hollywood. That got ushered in through the entertainment world. So to me, what Landman has done is that's an opportunity. That's an opportunity for every single person that works in the oil and gas industry, that's part of the supply chain. Like I said, if you're in the cafe that deals with it, it's a great way to have a conversation because they're not attacking you then. They're attacking Billy Bob Thornton. They're attacking the show Yellowstone. They're attacking Tyler Sheridan. Taylor, sorry. I got too many things. I'm getting old, man. I guess I can't hold on to things like I used to. But what do you make of that as far as the Landman and some of the entertainment that comes behind it?
Well, one thing is, there is potential for it to be, again, a net positive for, say, a net positive for the industry, but I mean, a net positive for the industry, to your point, Jason. It gets the conversation going, it causes people to ask questions. And again, if we're talking about, big truths, well, if they're asking questions and they're getting honest answers, on their own, well, then that's a good thing, right? Like, we should want people to search for and find the truth. So that's one piece. I think the other piece, Jason, that I see though is, so many people in the industry who are quick to say, and again, it's not a lot, but so many people who are quick to say, oh, Landman, it's wrong here, it does this wrong. And it's just like, they want to cast it aside. They want to say, well, if they got all these things wrong, then, to heck with it. Whereas, again, a conscious leader looks it all in, right? Says, hey, clearly there's going to be trade-offs, but, is Landman a net positive for the industry? And again, I'll speak for myself and say, yes, it is. I think, API, heck, I think they're a sponsor of Landman, so I think they would agree that it is a net positive, even though it's not perfect, even though there are things there that, again, they might get wrong. So, coming back to us as individuals, let's make sure that we're not sealing off and shutting down potentially valuable resources just because they're imperfect, Jason. And again, I think Landman is a perfect example of that type of situation and flawed, limited thinking, if you will.
I think your API example is a good example too, because they were against Landman the first season. And they were one of the ones that came out and said, oh, they got this wrong and this wrong and this wrong. And then after the season was done, they realized, oh my word, we were wrong on this. Like and for me, when I had the first season, I of course been in the media my whole life. So I understand that, there's a lot of liberties and a lot of suspension of reality that goes into anything that is in cinema or in television, if you will. And to me, that's a better opportunity to educate, because now you can say, when the guy was up on top of the poles and that sort of thing, that really wouldn't happen, but they needed him to get crushed. And so they had to do some things in order to advance the storyline. And then you can educate them on, in reality, it's this. This is what would happen, this is what would happen. And like, do you remember that scene in Landman when the
Oh
guy
yeah.
got crushed
Oh yeah.
underneath all that? Well, that really happened, but not the way it happened. So the end result was him underneath a bunch of those, the heavy machine or the heavy equipment. But he followed the safety protocols and everything along those lines. But accidents do happen. But in order to advance their storyline and be better Hollywood, they had to make stuff up. And that's where API said, okay, this is a popular show. Let's lean into it and help educate the things that they get wrong, but still celebrate what they're doing. And so that's how I looked at what API did, is they learned from their mistakes and then leaned into what the public was accepting as well. And that's what I think the industry needs to do more of, instead of being on this defensive, reactive nature. And that's how I looked at the API thing, was that, I think he did the wrench the wrong way in episode one. Oh, that's it. Landman doesn't know anything. Billy Bob Thornton doesn't
Yeah,
even
that
know
set
how to
off a
use a
lot of folks,
wrench.
Jason. That set off a lot of folks.
Didn't it? And I thought it was great. I'm like, oh, you kidding me? This is good. It gets people talking. And industry, get out and explain how they did it wrong. But more importantly, why it was wrong. Because if he did it this way, that whole job site would be blown up. So, like I said, a little bit of advancing of the narratives. But I think that's a great example of how the industry learned from itself, Joe. How API said, you know what? This show's in favor of us, even though they're not 100% in favor of us. And so I understand George Bush said, you're either with us or you're against us. And it's taken a while to get away from that. And, that's kind of how I look at a lot of that sometimes, is that, and this is other industries too. The media's like this, agriculture's like this, ethanol especially. Either you're with us or you're against us. It's nice when you can just have civil conversations and start to create some educational awareness, instead of, just gotta have the group think or nothing. You got any comments on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, you touched on one thing that, anybody who's worked with me knows that, one of the core elements of my coaching, my framework, my, energy program, if you will, is this idea that production, Jason, the production of wells, the production of oil and natural gas, it isn't black and white. And, examples of that are endless. How many wells are out there that, their initial production rates, their IPs are through the roof, they're tremendous. And then it turns out that that field there turns out to be a clunker. Those initial production rates are misleading. And conversely, sometimes you might have a well or a series of wells that are kind of ho-hum, they seem like they're mediocre, they're petering out. And then again, with a little bit of TLC there, next thing you know, again, it's tremendous. It's a great asset. It's profitable. Why? Because it's not black and white. The results don't always speak for themselves, if you will, Jason. So, to apply that to, again, our communication and our, the way we view people, the way we view companies, the way we view industries, and to look at it as all good or all bad, well, it's asinine. Can I say asinine? Maybe not. I don't know. I don't know your FCC rules here, but it's insane, right? It's insane to think that, these types of things are black and white. They're either good or they're bad. The truth, the big truth, if you will, is that people are complex, companies are complex, industries are complex. We should always strive for the good, But as soon as you try to box something in as good or bad, and you start blindly, unwittingly making decisions, communicating in a certain way, shutting yourself off to opportunities, well, Jason, you're not going to you're not exactly going to realize your full potential.
That is true. And I'm just looking at the clock here, and I was planning on a half hour interview. I'm trying to, excuse me, I had to do the cough button there. Trying to do interviews more than a half hour, but we're getting close to an hour here. And that's a good thing because we're educating and creating some awareness for World Shale Energy Day. Joe Sinnott is our guest. Whiting Partners is the name of his company. He's an executive coach. He also does a podcast, and it's called the Energy Detox Podcast. He does seasons because he's a smart gentleman. He doesn't do the weekly, he does seasons and different things. Have you got a new season coming up, or you got a podcast plug for us here, Joe?
Well, hey, I'll admit, I usually try to start the seasons here as we head into spring. So often coincides with baseball season. So going through the winter and the holidays, that's a good time to shut it down. I was a bit premature this year getting a podcast out at the end of January to coincide with the big storm that hit much of the United States. So there's been a bit of a gap since the first episode of the new season, but we're still
We
going to
call
call
that
it
a
season
special
seven here,
feature, Joe.
Jason. We're
We
still going to
call that a
ramp up
special
here.
feature. When you do one just out of nowhere, that's a special feature. It's a bonus. It's like the Christmas special, Charlie Brown. It's not during his regular scheduled time frame, so that's okay. You should actually try to do a season opener on World Shale Energy Day, maybe.
We shall see. We got a couple meet actual things on the calendar that do not involve green beer or Guinness, Jason. But yeah, we'll see what transpires here on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day slash World Shale Energy Day.
Well, I appreciate the time today and always the conversation and everything, and really just putting yourself out there for World Shale Energy Day. And it's for me, I can speak up in my neck of the woods that, I've lost friends because of the crude life. People that just write off oil. I mean, this color will trigger people. And I didn't even realize that till right now that it's got the Trump red in it. And so you've got colors. Now, politics has ruined the Crayola box, Joe. It's not only politics has not only ruined science, but it's ruined my eight color Crayola box to where colors are political now. That's even a little bit ridiculous. But Jim Scheer, is that his name? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, and again, if you go to that worldshellenergyday.org, you can find all kinds of information, contact information, opportunities to support and donate to, again, this grassroots cause. So go ahead, head to World Shale Energy Day. And I guess one other thing, Jason, here, if I
Yeah.
may, as we close. Again, I know we've been chatting for a while, but the last thing I'd be remiss to say after you mentioned the color of your hat is that, St. Patrick's Day, obviously green being the color of St. Patrick's Day, it is a natural connection to shale and the fact that shale development is as green as it gets from an environmental standpoint. Again, something that people don't realize that the environment is cleaner and greener because of shale development. And in the interest of time, I'll spare all of the reasons why, but suffice to say, again, the world, the planet is better off than it would have been if not for Halliburton there back on March 17th, 1949, introducing fracking, which again has allowed us to unleash shale reserves over the last 25 years and replace a lot of other methods of energy extraction, energy production that were nowhere near as green and clean as modern shale development, Jason. So again, natural tie-in there, certainly a parallel that I have leaned into heavily on prior World Shale Energy Day podcasts, episodes of the Energy Detox. But again, you bringing up your red hat there, I'd be remiss not to make one final pitch, one final claim that St. Patrick's Day and World Shale Energy Day are a natural fit.
I used to travel, to different shale plays and a number of things. And this is a true story. I got a hat for speaking and emceeing a conference in Wyoming, and it said "Make Energy Great Again." But it was, it looked like the Trump hat, "Make America Great Again." But it said "Make Energy Great Again." But it was a nice hat. It fit well, and it was fine. And when I drive either in New Mexico or Colorado or even Nebraska to a certain degree, I would actually put on a different hat. I would take off my red hat and I would put on kind of a gray with even some blue in it type of a thing, because people would treat me different. If I wore this make energy great or even this color of a hat in certain establishments, people would treat me totally different. And I thought to myself, well, maybe it'll get me out of a ticket. Like, maybe if I'm in Wyoming and I put my red hat on, I'll get out of a ticket. If I'm in Colorado and I take it off and put on a, more of a neutral one, it might help me with the different law enforcements. And that's sad that I would have to use headwear as a strategy. I even thought about putting a Bernie Sanders sticker on when I got into New Mexico one day. You know what I mean? So look at you over there going, yeah, that's how it goes. Of course, you're right up against New York, so you know exactly what I'm talking about. You ever thought about that, having to have different hats and bumper stickers just so you can be treated differently when you go to different areas?
Well, Jason, again, life and energy development is a statistical play, if you will. And yeah,
That's
I
funny.
think it's safe to say you can reduce the odds of you running into trouble, having your tires flattened or whatever else if you change what you're wearing and change how you're acting and change what's on on the bumper of your car, Jason. But again, there's trade-offs to that, right? Do you really want to set aside the opportunity to share an objective reality that is, energy is necessary and fossil energy is the leading contributor to our modern existence.
And I'll tell you the end of the story that happened with that, and why I stopped doing it was my I was baptized Catholic and I went to a Catholic school. I was an altar boy. It's taught Sunday school for 8 years, and so I always tell people, I was spoon fed, the Catholic fear and guilt my whole life, and so I carry a lot of that morals and a lot of the different ethics that came with the Catholic Church to who I am today. And after doing that, I didn't like it. I didn't like how it was a lie at the end of the day. It wasn't who I was. And so I stopped doing it because I wanted to be true to me and I wanted to stop enabling people. And it was the enablement that really didn't sit well with me was I'm actually enabling people when I take off a hat that I like wearing because I didn't care that it was the Trump color. It just, I liked the hat. It fit well. The brim was already in and it was, I liked it. And so that's how it landed with me was that the oil and gas industry actually brought out my ethics more than anything, because for so long when I was in the media, you got to be a chameleon. You got to be PC. You can only say the word ass once. Asinine is his own word. I meant it as a donkey that time. I was talking about, that definition. But you understand what I'm talking about, to where when you start conceding who you are, where do you stop? And for me, it literally was the oil and gas industry that brought me out of that enablement and conceding against who I was. So to me, it's not a livelihood that I'm grateful from the industry. It's more of bringing out my ethics more than anything, because there are some really hardworking, honest people in this industry. In fact, 95, if not 98 to 99% of this industry are some of the hardest working, honest people you've ever met in your life. I mean, they'll give you your vehicle and the shirt off their back, like a Christian, if you will. Anyway, I don't know if you have any comments on anything along those lines or not, but I'll just hand it back to you.
All I'll say to that, Jason, is, when people are following rules, right, that in their mind they've created, hey, I can't wear this particular hat in this particular environment. My job as a coach is to tactfully say, all right, well, so what? Let's play out what would actually happen, what might actually happen if you were to do that. And it's amazing how often, they're adhering to some sort of rule, but they haven't challenged it themselves in however long. They're doing it unconsciously, unwittingly, right? To obviously plug the name of my company. They're unconsciously doing these things that really are not serving them at all, and to your point, can actually be going the opposite direction. And so, when I sense or blatantly see people who are adhering to rules that I don't think are entirely rooted in what they would like, and certainly, not rooted in anything that's out there, officially, I get to ask that. Say, all right, well, says who? Who says that you have to take that hat off? Hey, how would it feel if you actually just left that hat on and went about your business? And, in that particular situation, you say, well, it would feel pretty good. It would feel like I'm authentic. And you know what, Joe? The odds that anything would actually come of it are actually pretty slim. And you know what? If somebody did say something, maybe you'd relish the opportunity to use some other tools to, lower the temperature, lower their guard, and try to have a civil, objective conversation. And, and at least on the case of March 17th, say, hey, what do you know about shale development here that has positively influenced the world over?
I think a lot of people are afraid of not being liked, and so they'll follow their groupthink and they'll follow their environment and et cetera. And I was talking with someone the other day, and we try to be as non-political as possible with the crude life, especially. I'll get political from time to time if the environment warrants it, and in the media, you try to have a good cop and a bad cop, if you will, because you just want to. Both sides, if you will, and everything along those lines. But I started noticing that the person I was talking with last week, they showed me a meme. You know what a meme is?
I do.
Okay. And so it's like a still picture that, whatever, that has some text
Jason, I mean,
underneath.
I'm a geriatric millennial, but I am still a millennial, so I do know what a meme is.
I know. I was just this is more for the radio audience, for the listeners going, a meme, okay. Because most people that listen to the radio, they're probably above 60 or above 50 at least, but we also have online people that listen quite a bit too. But at any rate, trying to please everybody still. But they showed me the meme where it was Trump, of course, being the most polarizing figure in America right now. Trump said that water is good for you and it helps with dehydration. So then the left stopped drinking water because and that's really where it got to me, was like that's how I've been feeling trying to do a media company that really helps educate and create awareness for the oil and gas industry. It's not even being a cheerleader. But if you are doing the awareness and the education, you're a cheerleader by default, but not all the time. Like when we had our Bakken issues where the DAPL protest was going on, I'd have on the protesters, but I'd also hold them accountable. And so when they would say things that were incorrect or in my mind's opinion-based and not factual, I'd hold them accountable for that. And a lot of times that would backfire, but I didn't care because, like I mentioned to you before, I got to a point where I just didn't feel comfortable enabling this anymore. Just as a person that was brought up through the Catholic Church, and I would imagine a Lutheran and even a Hindu or a lot of the other religions would do the same things, because so many religions are based on truth and based on, exploring the truth. But that's where I was kind of looking at it, Joe. Anyway, so I just thought I would put that out there quick before I give you an opportunity to either comment on it or give yourself a plug, as I'm looking at the clock here. Give yourself a plug for your business and your podcast and World Shale Energy Day one more time with Mr. Jim Scheer taking the bull by the horns and really doing a good job. He really has been doing a fantastic job. I remember when he reached out to me, what was it, 10 years ago or 8 years ago or whatever it was, and he still keeps at it, man. He still keeps at it. So anyway, just kind of some final thoughts and comments and professional plugs, if you will.
Well, Jason, whether it's a plug for World Shale Energy Day, for what I do, for what my podcast, The Energy Detox, does, it's all the same. It's boosting awareness, boosting consciousness, if you will. Now, again, there'll probably be a lot of unconscious people by the end of St. Patrick's Day, sharing, of course, the holiday with World Shale Energy Day. But at the end of the day, it's all about consciousness, thinking more clearly, slowing down so that you can act more intentionally, act more effectively. That's it. And that's where everything comes together. Again, in everything that I do, it's about being aware so that you don't unwittingly miss out on opportunities to grow, to develop, to do the right thing, to preserve your relationships, to play to your strengths. All of those things require a level of consciousness that is increasingly difficult in this age of distractions and AI and noise and everything else, Jason. So that's it. That is one universal plug for all of these things. Be conscious, be aware, and again, on March 17th, at the very least, be aware of the role that shale has played in our world and in our lives, all thanks to those first two commercial frack jobs on March 17th, 1949, in Texas and Oklahoma by Halliburton.
Should mention too, worldshaleenergyday.org does have a page where there's a lot of books that you can purchase or be aware of that have to do with the World Shale Energy Day. And I didn't realize there were so many that are kind of available. George Mitchell, of course, and I see Alex Epstein is on here and a few other people. Of course, I'll plug Terry Edom, the End of the Fossil Fuel Insanity, as well. Terry Edom from the BOE report out of Calgary, Alberta, Canada, as I like to call him, Canada's greatest export. He's does a fantastic job of really a lot of natural gas too, but the fossil fuels. I do see that next time that we speak, Joe. You've got like a whiteboard behind you, but it looks like a 3M whiteboard that you can rip off with some markers and things. So we'll need some visual aids next time because we do video interviews as well as radio interviews. But that's kind of fun. I was just looking at that going, oh, he could be drawing things just like Mike McCarthy's going to be doing for the Pittsburgh Steelers when Kyler Murray becomes the new quarterback. Whoa, did I say that? By the way, just real quick, because I'm in Viking land here, and they've all but signed Kyler Murray in their mind. But also, I see Ian Rappaport is still saying that the Pittsburgh Steelers might be getting Kyler Murray, which is it's a little bit different for me. But just one quick NFL question: who's going to be your quarterback next year? What's Pittsburgh talking about? I assume it's Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, I don't know about that, Jason.
Oh,
And I don't have any
really?
inside scoop. I don't have any, I'm not placing any bets on that, Jason.
Really? That's interesting to me. I thought it was all but a done deal. He might end up as a Viking yet then. Okay, all right.
Now,
Well,
all the chatter here is that the draft is coming in a couple weeks, and it would be nice to actually have the quarterback situation settled by then. I don't know. Aaron Rodgers, another year of doing what he does, which is whatever the heck he wants.
yeah. So is it Mason Rudolph and Will Howard? Is that right?
Yeah, and a lot of people are high on Will Howard.
Yeah.
Certainly the Steelers, they like the idea of having a franchise quarterback, and clearly he's young and fits the mold, and there's enough potential there for that to be realistic. But again, is that what they want to do for 2026? It remains to be seen.
It's all about the energy, folks. There's new, and the NFL loves it because there's all kinds of new energy coming, and that's the best tie-in I could do on that as we transition out here. Joe Sinnott is the guest. He's the host of the Energy Detox podcast. Do some business with him with Whitting Partners. Joe, what's the best way people can engage with you to get the conversation going about how you can assist their business?
Well, engagement, certainly you can head on over to LinkedIn. That's always pretty easy, whether you're looking for me or my company. It's all there. Always happy to strike up a conversation there. Or head to wittingpartners.com, WITTING, and you can find all kinds of different ways to contact me, Jason. Again, always happy to have a conversation about the impact and the potential value of conscious leadership in the energy industry.